All right, guys, let's welcome Chad Rulick of For the Fallen Dream is here to talk to me. And we're here live, man. How you been?
Great to see you again, brother. Doing good.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. We were just kind of catching up on the Rise Records thing, man, and just kind of those early days of Rise. And the one thing I kind of wanted to come out of the gate on with you is, obviously, you know, Change comes out on Rise, and then you quit the band.
Yeah.
And there's so many questions I have about that whole scenario. Sure. I mean, you start the band in, like, what, 03?
The band kicked off in 03. Yeah. Andrew Tkachuk, who's now plays for the Ghost Inside, started it with our guitar player, Jim Hocking, in 2003. Yeah. They were, I want to say, maybe their freshman year of high school, or maybe probably sophomore year of high school. And then I joined in 05 in my junior year of high school.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So I was, you know, playing bass. And, you know, but I remember, because I was booking shows in Northern Michigan back then. And at the time, For the Fallen Dreams was a Christian straight edge band.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm gonna give these guys a shot. I'll bring them here. So I booked them up in my hometown of Saginaw, Michigan. And I knew that they were pushing it then. Like they had something about them. I was like, this band is sick. Like, I enjoyed watching them. They were a fun group of guys, you know. So, and that was really early. And then after a while, you know, we had formed such a good relationship. And they're like, hey, they lost a bass player at the time. And they said, you want to come play bass? And, you know, I was a bass player first and foremost. That's, you know, that's what I've always,
I'm sorry.
I know it's a tough spot to hold.
Right.
You know, so I started out playing bass for the band, and we just kind of moved from there, man, in those early years.
So when you make the switch to vocals, and then obviously you're doing the shows, you're touring, and that's kind of in those like golden years of like metalcore, where, you know, a lot of like underground shows, a lot of basement shows, a lot of VFW halls, you know, even on the Christian metalcore side. I mean, there was that whole like church,
yeah,
you know, playing churches and stuff. I remember going home to my like little podunk hometown in Kentucky, and like the church that I grew up going to as a kid, like my grandparents were like, there's a band playing there tonight. I'm like, what? Like, why is there a band playing, you know, the old Baptist church in the middle of nowhere?
Right.
But yeah, man, that whole Christian metalcore scene, yeah, has always fascinated me. But
yeah. Well, I mean, we were doing shows with Devil Wears Prada. I remember, yeah, Devil Wears Prada came to town, and the local, one of the other local promoters around my area. And this is when I was in the band. They were like, you know, just For the Fallen Dreams want to come. There's this new band that's just, you know, huge on MySpace, right? And this band called Devil Wears Prada. I'm like, what? Okay, sure. It's MySpace era. You know, they got a little bit of buzz, and everyone had them in their profile songs. And we played a Methodist church with the Devil Wears Prada. And then we played the show the next day. It was a show in a gymnasium at a high school.
Wow.
Don't know how they booked it. But a gymnasium at a high school, Devil Wears Prada, everybody on the floor. So it was, yeah, that such a crazy time, man.
Yeah.
Metalcore, you know, obviously was in that era, real, you know, early 2000s. It was everyone's just trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
it's so fresh and new, right?
Yeah, and the one thing it was funny. I was talking to a band member of a Christian metalcore band, and he was talking about it was tough for them to transfer over to playing secular clubs and bars, yeah, and things, because, you know, they were making really good money playing that church scene, because,
yeah,
you know, there was church budgets and the kids were already kind of built in,
yeah,
and then they start to try to transfer over to, yeah, playing in a bar or a club, and like they had to take a pay cut, and they,
yeah,
the shows were smaller, and thank for
forgiveness,
yeah,
playing in a bar,
right, yeah,
the church,
yeah,
the
don't
bar,
tell anybody,
yeah,
but yeah, it's just wild that they almost didn't make the switch because they knew that they were going to take such a big pay cut.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but
crazy time.
I guess the question is, you know, you go through, you know, all the hard times and sleeping on floors and playing the small clubs. Then you get the record deal. Then you make the album, and then you leave. What, you know, what was the reason behind the leaving?
I think just being young, man. I think it was just all a lot. I mean, you don't know what you want,
right?
You have no clue, you know, and I think for me, it was just trying to navigate how I felt coming out of high school into this. Now, all of a sudden, you know, I'm out of high school.
Yeah.
everybody I know, and you know, they're going to college, and here I am from a small town.
Right.
You know, so now all of a sudden it's like it was just foreign territory. I had no clue what I was doing. It was just kind of like all of a sudden now you're on tour. Playing Weekenders was whatever, you know what I mean? We would get calls even back then, like, hey, you want to come play a show tomorrow? Or we would get calls, you want to come play a show tonight? And we would just show up. That was easy. Yeah. That was the easy part. But when you take a you take a 19-year-old or younger, 18, 19-year-old kid, and you say, you're not going to see your family. You're going to be trapped in a van with everybody. Yeah. You're going to, you know, weekends are easy. But when you're with the same guys that young, stuck in a van, eating, you know, Taco Bell every day, and you're like, what path am I on? What is this? Is this what?
Yeah.
Is this sustainable? Is this, you know, there's those moments of fun. And I think for me at the time, I just made a rash decision of, I don't think this is for me.
Yeah.
And I think I need to like reset, you know what I mean? And that was just, looking back on it, it was a very, I'm going to quit.
Right.
And then the guys, waiting for the guys to be like, don't quit.
Right.
You know, and I think I just followed through with it, and that's how it all went down, man. But I think it needed to be that. It needed to be that. I needed to leave, and I needed to start Legend. They needed to bring in their guy,
yeah,
the new guy, and then that needed to be impactful for when I came back, because the sound change that they had went through after I left, you know, for me to then come back, it made that more impactful. You know, a part of whatever it is. My legacy of with this band, right. You know, it had to be to continue to that it is.
Was it tough on you to kind of see them put out more records, bigger tours, a Day to Remember shows, you know, like yeah, like Jeremy McKinnon doing stuff with you?
Yeah.
Like, how hard was that for you to kind of sit back and like, man, I shouldn't have quit, or that could
yeah,
be
for sure. Know? I had those moments, you know, where I was just exactly that. Oh, I should have done this, or I should have done that. And but really it was a big motivator to get back into it.
Yeah.
It was the kind of like, oh, well, yeah, well, Legend's going to be bigger before the Fallen Dreams. So, you know, and I went full steam ahead, yeah, with Legend. That was kind of my project from the start, which, you know, and I had a great relationship with Rise still. Craig Erickson was a great friend of mine. And when he knew I was starting Legend, he's like, can we sign the band?
Right.
I was like, of course you can. So, you know, the first Legend record, all the Legend stuff came out on Rise. And so while I took that time off, it wasn't long before I knew this is what I do. It, you know, this is what I need to do, whether it be for a spiteful reason or not.
Right.
I knew that I just needed, music was where I wanted to be. And I think it kind of allowed me to create what I wanted and kind of lead the direction of where I wanted to be as a vocalist or the music. And so, but yeah, those crazy years of just being young and making rash decisions, as they do in college too, right? Kids making stupid decisions. And then for me, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
But it just kind of, it painted the picture of the next chapter of coming back.
Yeah, it's funny, man. The band I was in before Primer 55, like I had started in high school. Or I joined in high school. They were already out of high school. In it for a few years, you know, did all the shows, did everything, push. And one day I was just like, this isn't going anywhere. And so I got to practice early, packed up all my gear, told the guys I was quitting, like drove away. And as soon as I drove off, I was just like, ah,
shit.
I guess I, and then like, I talked to our guitar player a couple days later. I'm like, all right, I'm good. I'm ready to come back. And
yeah.
And they're like, no, you quit.
Yeah.
And I was like,
we already got a guy, bud.
Like, shit. So, so I ended up, that's when I hit up anybody I had ever met in music and said, hey, I'm a bass player. You know, do you know anybody needing a bass player? And that's when Bobby Burns hit me back and said, hey, you know, we actually do need a bass player for this tour. But yeah, man, spite is a crazy emotion when it comes to wanting to push something further. You know, there's been many a time where either somebody tell you can't do something,
exactly,
or you know, you see your friends doing something that you're like, I want to do that. I want to do it better. Or just anybody that pisses you off, you're like,
for sure.
Like it's a, as much as you want to do something for yourself, sometimes you're just like, kind of do it out of a little bit.
Yeah, especially at a young age, right?
Yeah.
full of piss and vinegar and want to prove everybody wrong, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those like just very powerful human emotions. Yeah. The same with like the nostalgia factor. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point, but like the nostalgia factor is a very powerful thing.
Oh man, nostalgia, you know, will kill us all. I've said that.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you come back in 2013, was it just like a simple phone call? Like, hey, Chad, do you want to come back?
Pretty much. Yeah. I think that was kind of the next move. You know, I was kind of winding down with Legend. I mean, we were still touring, but with the Legend stuff, I wanted to create with that band more than I wanted to tour.
Yeah.
And then, you know, For the Fallen Dreams, I knew that they, obviously, I'd still stayed friends with Andrew and Jim, but I knew that was they had the tour history, right? Yeah. Now they were, you know, they had a ton of tours under the belt. They were doing every single All Stars tour. They were doing the Outbreak Monster Energy Drink tour. Day to Remember. They, you name it, man. Like they were on. Like they were just a part of, like, because it was a very impactful band at that time, and it was every band's favorite band.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just wanted to bring For the Fallen Dreams up because they loved Changes, or they loved Relentless, or whatever it was. You know. So I remember just even like the guys from A Day to Remember or Motionless. You know, I've had conversations with those guys, like Chris Motionless. Toured with them when I came back, you know, and I remember him just coming up to me like, dude, just thank you for being. I've loved the band forever.
Yeah.
Such a sweet guy. It's just a crazy time to come back, and but I was also, I knew it wasn't just going to be some, oh well, now I get to take over and grab all these big tours, because it was complete opposite. Because when I came back, it was time to go to work, because there was a lot of things that have happened while I was gone that I felt like I needed to come in and sense, almost like help clean up.
Yeah.
You know,
so when you leave the band in 08, and then obviously your record is big with them, and then they do a couple more records without you. Obviously you said the touring, they'd already done all this touring under their belt. Yep. You come back. Was it like going into a different band, or was it like going into, like, the situation was different? Like, it wasn't just a bunch of, you know, a local band that got signed and all of a sudden we're on tour. Now it's a machine, and you're kind of plopped back in. Like, did it feel different when you got back?
It did, but I had, like, so Naveed Nagdi, the drummer for Legend, he was touring with me during the Pale Horse era of Legend.
Okay.
And For the Fallen Dreams, when they asked me to come back, they had also, their drummer had left.
Yeah.
So I brought Naveed with
me. Okay, nice.
So I kind of had like him to lean into. And it was Jim, and me and Jim had been friends since, again, goes back to the 05, 06, 03. So I've known the guy forever. So it wasn't like it was a four-piece band of everybody and I didn't know them. Now I'm in the hot seat as the new guy. I kind of got to come in and almost pick up where I left off, because Jim and I still had a relationship. You know, I brought Naveed with me, so he was my guy. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and then Brandon Statsny was the bass player at the time. Great guy. So it was a very easy environment to jump back into. It was from there. I didn't even rehearse with the band until we did our first tour. So and our first tour was Europe.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, so we showed up in Leipzig, Germany, played the first show, and I was just fat and out of shape. played the first show, just winded. But it was an easy transition. It really didn't feel, there was not a lot of pressure. It was just kind of like, hey, we picked up where we left off. Let's get back to it. You know, there was no, like, what's the word I'm looking for here? I guess there was no standard that, like, you're jumping right into a tour with, you know, Gwar and Killswitch Engage. Like, it was kind of like you're back on your own, time to get back to
work. Right.
Because it was a headliner, too. So.
The, you know, we were talking about Killswitch earlier. This is very similar. You know, Jesse starts the band, leaves, comes back. You know, did you have any issues singing songs that were on the other albums that you weren't on, or was there anything?
As far as like an ego thing, that it was never like a thing like that. I thought the band had put out some great records about me. I think Relentless, the record that they put out directly after Changes. I love that record, man. We play a lot of the stuff live from it still. You know what I mean? It's some of my favorite material, I think, just because it was still very, very genuine for the Fallen Dreams. You know, like Jim and Andrew both were writing from the heart still. Still very young. They still had these a lot to prove, like you know. So it was, I never had any issue, like, coming in and singing it. And then, as far as, like, I guess performance-wise doing it, it wasn't anything that I wasn't prepared to do. So, and we, especially coming in, though, too, we kind of, the manager at the time was having us lean into Chad's back, let's play Changes. Right. Chad's back, let's not play too much of the stuff while he's gone. So it was easier to do that. And we incorporated, you know, some of the newer albums later on. But the first jump in, it was a lot of the record that I was on just to kind of reestablish my footing, and then stuff from Relentless, which was hand in hand. A lot of Changes influenced stuff anyway.
So you weren't the one guy that left the band that didn't listen to the non-you stuff. Because everybody leaves the band's like, I don't care about that. I never listened to, you know, it's like Dave Mustaine saying he never listens to Metallica.
Yeah, I've never heard a song. No, man. I didn't care. I think, you know, obviously I was bitter at first.
Yeah. I was
pissed that they continued to be a band in that first week of me leaving. But I enjoyed it for what it was. Yeah. I was proud of the guys. Legend for the Fallen Dreams did a tour together before I went back, you know. So,
let's see here. So you come back in 2013. Obviously, you said you go to Europe for the first time, or with the band. How have the last 10 or so years been for you?
Well, I've been back twice as long as I was gone.
Right.
You know, so it's still been. Been a grind still, man. It's still been a lot of hard work. I don't feel like we've let up.
Right.
It's still been a lot of proving to ourselves and proving to this scene as a whole, like, we belong here.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about it. Been around.
Yeah.
Accomplished some great things. So I think it's still a thing for us where we still feel like we got a lot to prove, but not in a way like where we need to force it down people's throats. It's been a grind still. It's nothing that I'm not new to, though.
Right.
So I'm patient. Patient. So but it's been fun, man. Like, it wasn't fun, I wouldn't be here this long. You can kind of see the writing on the wall if you feel like you're beating a dead horse. And I've said this to other people that are now involved with the band. I've talked about it with managers or anybody that's a part of the For the Fallen Dreams internal team, that it feels different this time. Really does. And I'm just excited to still be here. I love that each night, you know, I've done so many support runs in the past year, because pre-COVID, you know, we did, we had our record Six that came out, and we did Direct Four of Mice and Men. Great guys, great tour. And then COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we didn't jump right back on the horse when COVID kind of opened.
Right.
Everyone was going back, but tours were getting canceled left and right. So I kind of just like, let's just keep doing stuff behind the scenes. Let's keep writing. And we didn't jump right back into touring. So our first tour back was last February. And we did Direct for Gideon.
Nice.
And then, you know, we followed that with doing, we did Direct for Bad Wolves. And we did Direct for Monuments. And we did so much touring this year. It feels good to know that we're still in the position to be able to come out and support these bands who are just doing great.
Yeah.
It makes me feel like, okay, maybe one second, doing something right. So, like, again, it just it feels different. I'm really optimistic about just putting in the hard work, man. It doesn't matter what job it is. As long as you're showing up every day and you're being genuine and you're taking care of business, opportunity and success will follow.
What's your kind of current take on metalcore? Like, the, you know, we were kind of talking, you know, pre-recording about how it's kind of turning it, you know, kind of taking a rock lane, and, you know, that there's the joke of the octane core and all that. And there's, I love a lot of that stuff. I love what you guys are doing. I love, like, you know, just a lot of the bands that are of that genre.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of taking it, but they're also making bigger, powerful, you know, more powerful choruses than absolutely, things like that. So what's your kind of take on where it is right now?
I think metalcore now more than ever is at its height, at least the biggest it's ever been. Now it's, I mean, even 5-10 years ago, you would have, you heard Data Remember on the radio, and you're like, what? Right. You know what I mean? But now you're here, like, heavy's in right now, seeing, you know, bands like Bad Omens, who are just massive, and Spirit Box, and these bands that are doing these massive arena tours. You know, you have even deathcore, right? You have Slaughter to Prevail going out with Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah.
So I think it's the most exciting time. It's the most successful it's been. It's reached this point all these years, kind of molding into it. I think with most trends, though, too, there's the downside of it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of follow the formula, and you start losing a little bit of that, right? And it's kind of what it was with nu metal at the time, too. Everyone followed the nu metal formula, you know, and you had the A list and the B tier and the C tier nu metal bands,
right?
You know, and only a few made it out of that, right? And but they're coming back too, some of these bands, and it's all fueling what it is. But I think the lines are so blurred now, you know what I mean? So I think it's very cool again that, like, there's bands like, you know, bands like Bad Omens and Spirit Box are kind of leading the way for metalcore right now, making some big moves, and that always helps the collective. That always trickles downhill to where bands like us, it's not weird to say, oh, I heard For the Fallen Dreams on the radio last night. It's like,
yeah, I think metalcore and like the Djent and all that stuff, I think that all those guys kind of honed the way metal sounds, like, recorded. And I think that they've kind of taken that and really expanded the horizons of metalcore. Yeah. And because all those Djent guys had to get that precise sound and precise drums and really perfect everything. And now when you turn on, you know, like I said, Octane and all that stuff, I mean, all that stuff just sounds so good and so tight. And I think a lot of that comes from the metalcore, you know, dudes trying to get that sound onto tape.
Well, that's why you're seeing a lot of guys in metal, drummers and guitar players, and they're now session guys for big country bands, big rock bands, is because metal is so keen on being, you better be tight, you better be airtight. And that's, I think, what's really cool is now you're seeing these genres of bands, you know, blurring the lines with country and rock and rock and metalcore. And it's all this weird big fusion that's going on right now where nothing is weird.
Yeah.
Nothing is odd. Nothing is out of place. You have Dimension Spirit Box again. They're doing songs with Megan Thee Stallion.
Yeah.
Like, the lines are so blurred right now, and everybody wants a piece of it. And I think it's cool. And it's, again, it just kind of opens up the door. I mean, trends and fads, one will die and one will come in. Yeah. Octane chorus. But out of all that, there's been a lot of great bands that have been discovered, and they've done a great job at breaking a lot of bands that you may have not heard of.
Yeah.
So I think it's an exciting time at all.
Yeah, it's you've got so many dudes, even like a Nick Nocturnal, which you did the song with. You know, he's like, why would I ever tour? He's like, I'm just gonna write these songs in my house.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get my friends to sing on them.
Yeah.
And he's probably bigger than most bands right now.
Yeah, it's crazy, dude. He's such a good guy too, man. Like, it was a pleasure working with him. Touch on that, like,
yeah.
My buddy Brad, they were in, like, crunch time. I guess they were trying to get Howard.
So. Okay.
And, you know, one of the greatest metal vocalists of all time. But luckily for me, Howard couldn't do it.
Right.
So I got to come in and kind of just show what I could bring to that type of sound. And Nick called me on a Thursday. I talked to him on a Thursday. And he was like, hey, man, great to meet you. Love the band. Can you get me stems and everything final by Sunday night? I was like, this Sunday? He's like, yeah, this Sunday. I was like, oh, shit. Okay. So I went to work, man, and got it done in like a 3-day stint, you know, wrote the song, and then went in with Josh Schroeder.
Nice.
A good friend of mine now is killing it. And went in and tracked it, and he released it that Monday. But with Nick, man, he's just such a great songwriter.
Yeah.
Great guy, very in tune with where metal and rock and everything is, because he can kind of poke fun at it too. And that's one of the reasons why he's so good to to blend all these things. He's like, oh, I can play that. Oh, a Limp Bizkit riff? Forget about it. I got this. So that was a great experience.
Yeah, I get to interview him maybe a year or two ago. It was one of those things where I get pitched the interview and I'm like, well, what's he promoting? I'm like, nothing really. He just wants to talk. And I'm like, all right, well, let's talk. But yeah, he's just so much fun to, I love all the, you know, how to in 30 seconds, you know, how to do this in 30 seconds, how to do that. And then when he puts the songs together and then puts them out, you know, obviously, you know, seeing you pop up on the track, I was just like, yeah I know that guy.
Yeah.
It's like the Leonardo DiCaprio meme or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of talk about, you know, we've talked about metalcore and how, you know, Octane and all that stuff. But I mean, the one big thing with you and Gideon did it heavy on this last record, kind of the new metal influence on everybody, because I remember when I left kind of the new metal era and I'm playing in bands in 05, you know, new metal was not a cool thing at the time, but I was in some like metalcore bands, but you know, I didn't really like promote that it was like me from the new metal band. And then now it's just like, now metalcore has so much of that new metal in it. I mean, like I said, that Gideon record's got like DJ scratching and stuff on it, man. So it's wild to hear that stuff again. But I guess kind of looking back on it, I guess all you guys kind of grew up on it. Mm-hmm. And then now it's just kind of seeping out.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're young, you know, I can only speak for myself, but for me with new metal, it was, I mean, that's my roots, man. That's what got me from doing, I mean, that's what got me into metalcore. It went from doing, I was listening to Slipknot and Mudvayne and 55. Like I was listening to all these new metal bands, Slaves on Dope, you name it, man, like Static X, like those are the bands that made me.
Yeah.
And then as you're 12, 13, 11, 10, whatever it is when you first heard this stuff. And then metalcore was like heavier.
Yeah.
So it was cooler because it was like, oh, new metal? No. This is doing metalcore is heavier now. So it was almost like it was like the next step up to whatever band you wanted to be. So even with joining For the Fallen Dreams, you know, metalcore was then the cooler cousin of new metal. Yeah. So you left that behind and you forgot about it. Well, it still had its influence on you because you, especially for me, I still had that influence even in Changes, like their stuff. And I think it's funny when people are like, you guys remember when For the Fallen Dreams was a melodic metalcore band, not a new metal band? I was like, listen, guys, I don't know if you listen to that record, but we ripped off a lot of Slipknot. You know, there's a part in Vengeance where I ripped off Spit It Out, ripped off the vocal line, like verbatim. I just changed the lyrics.
Right.
And that's in 2008. So I think as you get older, you know, and you get less of that, like, I have something to prove. I need to only be the heaviest band. Right. You just kind of let loose, man. You're like, you got to find inspiration again. And for me, inspiration has always comes from the deepest seated part of you. And for me, the new metal side, it gets to that point where I'm able to just say, this is a big chunk of why I'm even here. Why not let that breathe?
Right.
This is what made me. And because of that, you get stuff that's authentic. You know, people may say, oh, they're this or that, but that's authentically you. If you're able to go out there and if it doesn't feel forced, and it's never felt forced with me, even with the new record. And that's what makes it. I think that's why new metal's back, baby. Everybody's doing it because they're kind of letting loose a little bit, just letting it feel. And for the younger guys, you know, it's you know, that's cooler because they're younger. They're discovering bands like that now. You know what I mean? Like, what's the band? And I love them. Tala,
I think.
Tala. Sick band. Mm-hmm. Young guys. Yeah. But you know what I mean? So they're one of those bands. They're making new bands. And I love it.
Yeah, it is wild to see, like, younger guys doing the new metal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even doing, you know, new pod for Knotfest and kind of seeing the listeners. And sometimes I'll click on people that comment a lot just to see, like, because I always just assume they're my age and relive in the past or whatever.
Right.
And then I'll see these guys that are commenting. I'll click on them and they were born in 98.
Right.
And I'm like, so wait a minute. When did you get into nu metal? But right. Yeah. And it is crazy to see like that Limp Bizkit a Lollapalooza recently, like, you know, where the 100,000 people are.
We're talking the Brazil one.
Yeah. And I think it's in Argentina. Yep. But I mean, they pan the crowd during break stuff, and it's bigger just like a sea of people. Yeah. And we actually had this conversation about, like, if I was in a band now, I would never play the States. Like, yeah. put me in South America and leave me there, because
right.
You know, when Pantera came back and they those shows down there, yep. It was just like this mass of people just freaking out and. Even like when death metal bands play down there, it's just like 8,000 people going crazy for Cannibal Corpse. And then you show a Cannibal Corpse show in the States and, you know, in Iowa, and there's like 200 dudes just going like, yeah.
It's always been, I feel like it's maybe my album more than ever, but it's just the States, they're a hard sell sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I feel like Europe does well for a lot of bands that have phased out in the States.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like look at Walls of Jericho. Like Walls of Jericho doesn't tour the States.
Right.
And if they did, I'm sure people would still be there. Absolutely a great band. But when they tour Europe, it's huge. That's a big band, man. And then the same, they're just able to appreciate it more. They're not as hung up on genres or not as hung up on, oh, they used to sound like this. They're just happy.
Right.
And that was a big thing. We did South America. You know, we showed up. This was, you know, this weren't doing anything crazy. This was pre-6, right after Heavy Hearts came out in 2013, 2014. And we went over there with The Word Alive and Silverstein.
Oh, nice.
And we got off the plane and there were fans outside of the airport, like with signs.
Nice.
And I was like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if I rolled up to Headliners Music Hall right now, there's not going to be 15 fans, you know, with presenting me with a cake with my face on it. It's not going to happen. But Argentina or Brazil, very well could happen, where they have like a sign with a bobblehead of me and want me to sign everything they have. I think they're just a little more appreciative. Love for the States.
Yeah.
A little more appreciative in other parts of the country, because they're just not hung up on all the little things that the Western world is. Right.
Well, I mean, we're also
spoiled.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Spoiled, because I mean, you know, For the Foundry is going to tour, and then you're going to tour next year. You're going to, you know, you don't get to South America. You haven't been there since 2013, 2014.
No.
So, you know, they're excited to see you get back.
Absolutely.
But I did see a couple of people dressed in shark costumes while I was waiting for you to come out. So you did have some fans in shark costumes. So.
Yeah. Thank God. my loyal shark fans. Love it.
Thank God. Let's see here. A couple of random things. You know, tour. So going back to like, you know, your early tours, you know, 03, 04, 05, and then touring now with, and this is totally just came out of my brain the other day, touring now with like DoorDash and like Uber and just, you know, if you need something like a pair of socks from Walgreens, you can hit up Target on your app or something like that and have some socks delivered.
Yep.
You know, back in the day, it was like you had to get a runner, or you had to find some, you know, a fan to run you to Walmart. Runner?
You had to find a fan.
You know, like, anything you can do. So, how often do you do anything like that with DoorDash? Do you have a, you know, craving for food, and you're like, you know what, I'm gonna, or is it just you're still trying to be thrifty on tour and you don't touch that stuff?
Oh man, if now it's half the fun of touring is all the food that's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So. We use DoorDash pretty often. Our one of our guys right now that's playing for us. He's a very simple guy who loves Chipotle every day.
Okay.
Every day. Now, I mean, you'll see a DoorDash coming up, and he didn't even tell anybody. You'll see a DoorDash coming up, and I'll see Chipotle every day, no matter what. So, you know, we've taken advantage of it, because even still, like, you know, obviously touring, you're not always in city center with tons of food to eat. We've played random, like yesterday, you know, we were in Indianapolis and the venues, it's got some stuff around, you know what I mean? But it was Sunday, maybe. I don't know. Either way, DoorDash has saved us as far as just like getting food, or, oh, I need a, you know, one of the guys is down. I'm just going to DoorDash Nyquil. I don't rocker. You know what I mean? Right. Because it's like, can I take the rig? It's like, because we're in an RV these days. So taking a 30-foot RV and a 12-foot trailer, it's like, we're stationary. If you need something, if you're walking or use the handy dandy app.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming, you know, you still get a food buyout at some point from the club, or they're going to cater it, or it's 13 pizzas and you're just like, not pizza again, you know, and you got to hit up the app and you're like, God, you know, Chipotle does sound good today.
Right. And I guess that's how you know the band's progressing, is we don't get stuck with just tons of pizzas anymore. Yeah. So that's a good thing. Nice. So if all else fails, this ends tomorrow. At least I didn't end out on Little Caesars tour.
Right. Thank God. Hey, we're not giving you a food buyout today. We got pizza for you guys.
There you go, guys.
Here's the breadsticks.
Hot and ready. Enjoy them. God bless them.
How random is your TikTok or Instagram reel algorithm? Like, what are you stuck on? Like, what kind of random stuff do you watch?
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
Like, my personal?
Yeah.
Right now, my algorithm is stuff. Like I said, I got my first son on the way. So I'm seeing all sorts of, thank you, brother. I'm seeing lots of, first time dad and mom stuff. That's the algorithm. And then it's very odd. I shouldn't say odd. It's a part of, like we talked about earlier, is lots of turtles. I love it, man. That's one of my things. Like I said, it's like I'm like obsessed with like just turtles.
Turtles.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I got like five ponds at home where I house like these exotic turtles from around the world. I mean that too.
How are you getting these turtles?
Well, you can get them off these sites that like these breeders in Florida. So I have like these like Indonesian like snake neck turtles where they're like their shells are like this big and their necks are this long, and it's just one of my odd hobbies that I really enjoy, man. It's like something I started doing during COVID and just got stuck. So, like my basement is like a big aquarium with these like these. I have these 450-gallon ponds all through my basement with turtles and baby stuff right now. That's
turtles and baby stuff. All right. Yeah,
random.
Yeah, I didn't know if you know. I think mine's like stuck on like some weird like police chases. I don't know why. Like it's always like, and it's not even like your normal police chase. It's always like old ladies that like all of a sudden just like freak out and they drive off and they tackle like
a storefront.
They tackle like a grandma to the ground for running on a ticket for.
Boy, what are you watching?
I don't know, man. I don't
even. All it takes is one video in the algorithm to really just pull you through a real weird spell of the algorithm. Doesn't take much.
And plumbing videos, like, and the funny thing about plumbing videos, it's like I don't know anything about plumbing, carpentry, like any of that stuff. I like to watch it, and I'm like, man, that guy did a really good job. And then I open up the comment section, and every time it's like 80 carpenters, like that is the worst angle I've ever seen.
He didn't even fly the right wing knot at the end.
Oh, what's this guy doing? That's illegal. That won't pass inspection. Yeah, all that stuff. It's just like everybody hates everything on the internet.
Like the Tom Segura podcast. I watch it every now and again. He's a funny guy. And I think one of his segments that he does is he just goes through like random viral videos, right? Or like whatever content creator, and he'll just go through the comments and just everybody just shitting on each other. But the comments are such gold that he'll just like, that's a whole segment where he can just read off the comments and that'll bring people in just to watch the podcast based on that.
Comment sections are wild, man. Do you dive into the For the Fallen Dreams one, or do you stay away from
it? I every now and again, you know, obviously some will pop up. It's like, you guys suck, play the old stuff. But other than that, brother, whatever.
How are you with it? Can it be like 50 good ones and then that one bad one to like stabs you in the heart, or are you like, can you gloss over it?
Obviously that's what everyone's supposed to say, like, it doesn't affect me, I don't care. But I genuinely, like, I don't care if I take time out of my day to let the one guy out of the 50 that says you guys suck, play changes, I okay, dude. Sure, all right, right on.
Play my favorite album from when I was in high school.
Yeah. Well, that's when we talked about nostalgia.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Powerful thing, man. People feel cheated sometimes. You know, they feel like you've taken this away from me. You've taken away something that makes me feel, you've taken away my childhood. Yeah. I really genuinely feel that way. People get very upset when you, bands, it's even weirder, because if you play something that's, and it's not even just us, but any band that's any sort of sound shift, or it's not as good as the record that they loved because they associate it with. This is when me and my best friend went to every single show.
Yeah.
This is when, you know, I was going, I was stationed overseas or any of that. So when you come back and play stuff and they can't recognize that, I feel like, at least in my opinion, that people kind of feel like cheated out of taking that.
Yeah.
Taking that from me. I want to hear the stuff that you wrote almost 20 years ago, because it makes me feel those things I felt 20 years ago. And that's why nostalgia, I think, is so powerful. And we're all guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
Even for, right.
I have a new metal podcast.
This is true.
You know, it's funny. It's kind of like that Saturday Night Live theory of like SNL was like a lot of kids' first time they stayed up late.
Yeah.
And they were able to watch something that was a little risque
for
their, you know, when they're 12 and 13 and in high school. And then so they glom, like, if someone says like this, the new SNL sucks, it was only good with a certain cast, 99% of the time that cast will be their high school cast.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, dude, if you go back and watch some of those Saturday Night Live from that year, those years, they suck too. Like, I love Saturday Night Live. Like, I still watch it every week. Like, I love the show.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and they have their good sketches, they have their bad sketches.
Right.
But it's funny how that's a comment section that's always, anytime you see an SNL skit online, they're like, this sucks, you know. This,
so bad.
And, you know, go back to Mike Myers and Dana Carvey, you know, it hasn't been good since the 70s.
Or, yeah.
You know, all that stuff. Yeah. SNL is a huge, almost like a, what do you want to say? Like a testing ground for when you were in high school. That's when it was cool. And everything after that sucks, you know. And then, you know, no matter what, oh, this sucks.
Everything sucks. Yeah. But that's a great way to put it, though, man. Really, because it's so long standing.
Yeah.
You know, even for us, call it 18 years.
Yeah.
In and out. It's a chunk of time. Yeah. And anytime you have anything that's the same, it's still called Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
It's still called For the Fallen Dreams.
Right.
And as much as things change,
you
know, that when you have a chunk of time of something being under one title,
you're
gonna have multiple age groups of people who have come in, who have come out, who have come back, and they can say, you know, that's where the divide is of you can appreciate for what it is. Yeah. I'm stoked Saturday Night Live still here.
Yeah.
Or you can say this sucks. I'm only watching the reruns.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I think that goes back to when someone says, play changes, you know, play something old. But it does go back to that nostalgia of being in high school and hey, For the Fallen Dreams is playing 4 hours away tonight. Let's go. And like you could just go. Like you know,
no work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just we're getting in the car. We're mashing everybody in Corsica and we're going.
Yeah. I mean, like now if someone said that to me, I'd be like, I know. Like I have to work. That means I'll be, you know, if we go to the show, I won't get home till 4 a.m. You know, like I'm not doing that.
But absolutely.
I'll catch them next time we're on YouTube. Like that.
Absolutely.
But man, I'll never forget, man. I was driving. This is obviously pre-cell phones and everything else. I was driving home from school and three of my friends passed me like coming from my house. I'm like, what were they doing at my house? I saw them the next day. They were coming to pick me up from Nashville to drive to Knoxville to go see Deftones in 95.
Sick.
And so they still went.
Oh, cool.
And like, I'm like, I didn't get to go. Like, it was like,
you didn't have your pager on you.
I didn't think I had a pager yet. it was, you know, I think they had mailed me a letter or something.
Yeah, like, brother.
That would have been nice. One more thing I wanted to hit you with was your family. You kind of come from a bluegrass family.
Yeah.
You know, your grandfathers and things like that kind of played that. So did you grow up listening to that around the house? How did you take it as a kid? Were you kind of like, well, that's old music, but then do you appreciate it more now? Kind of thing, like any of that stuff?
My grandfather was and my grandmother are both great musicians.
Yeah.
Grandfather, you know, really because of him, I was 12 years old. Where's a 12-year-old going to buy a Harkey full stack and an LTD bass?
Right.
It's not going to happen. That's a lot of lawns to mow.
Yeah.
And he traded in one of his Gretsch guitars and got me my first bass gear. But you know, he was always playing, you know, Haggard. He was always playing like Willie and all that stuff. And so I was always able to appreciate what the music was. It wasn't my music.
Right.
But I remember, you know, even when I first started playing, I remember this was like a thing. One of the only times I can remember over the past 36 years, like going back and forth with my grandfather. Him and I were two peas in a pod. Like, he was the greatest human. And I remember him saying, "Well, what chords are you guys playing?" And I remember saying, "We don't play chords." And he'd be like, "Well, you do. What key are you in?" I was like, "We don't play in keys. We just play.
Yeah, right.
We just hit the strings."
Yeah.
He was like, "No, you don't. You're in a key. What key are you in?" And I had no clue. And I remember just going back and forth. And he'd be like, eventually, realized he was arguing with a 12-year-old. And he was like, "Okay, go play your MXPX."
Right.
But growing up on country and bluegrass and all of that was the bones. My mom and my grandfather and that whole side, because his brothers and his sisters, he came from a family of seven brothers and sisters, and they all played.
Yeah.
They played violin. They played one of them grabbed a harmonica or whatever it was. They all played. So it was always, it was always around. Mm-hmm. Music was never an odd thing for me. And then to really appreciate it until I started like becoming more of a musician. Because as a kid, you know, at least for me, I mean, I wasn't a musician at first. I was just some punk kid who wanted to be in a band.
Right.
I saw Prodigy at 3 a.m. on TV and I wanted to be Keith Flint. Right. You know what I mean? But then that turned into me, you know, starting to learn how to be able to appreciate like the organic of what it is to make music. And once I became like a musician, as a bass player, as a singer or a songwriter, whatever it is, then I was able to start appreciating the side of country and bluegrass and all that stuff. So, and now too, one thing my grandfather, before he passed, it was a huge thing for me. And it's I don't want to say regret because regret's not the word, but I wanted to make a song with him so bad because he was such a good singer and he was such a good guitar player. And in those years, because I've only been singing for maybe 2 years, mm-hmm. only learned how to screaming.
Right.
Metalcore song with my grandpa, probably not. But now that I've found I find myself in this position of finding my voice as a singer and able to sing, whether it be rock music or something to an acoustic, that's where I'm heading. That's where I want to be. And he got to hear like the last record. He got to hear me sing.
Oh, nice.
He was so proud. And I just really wish we had talked about it, you know, the 6 months leading up to him passing. And I remember saying, let's pick out a song. You send me your favorite Merle song and we're going to do it.
Nice.
And it just didn't end up happening.
I hate that.
I know. What I was able to do though, is find old tapes of him singing. So I don't know how yet, but I want to try somewhere, some way, be able to incorporate that with something along the line. And I'd love to do, you know, like some kind of a country mashup or something with him. What a guy he was. So sooner or later, I got to do a country record.
There you go. Yeah. Did you watch that Beatles documentary by any chance? It's like about a 12-minute documentary. They released a new song like last year. And they did a documentary on how they got the AI to pull John Lennon's voice off of this like tape that they basically found.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wrote a song around it.
Yeah.
And so there you go.
We're going to make it
AI
happen.
AI is wild, man.
Yeah. Even with like the new unreleased or released now, but like the Linkin Park stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It's just, you know, you hearing some of that. So. At some point, you know, just to say that I did it and be able to say, hey, Pops, you know, like, I finally did you. Because he always wanted me to do, like, a country stuff. He always, like, he was like, well, how long till we do a country? When are you going to do a country song? So whether it be a cover of an old Merle song of his or original, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, and hey, country and metal and everything is—it's the lines are getting blurred, man. You know.
Yeah. Now more than ever, man. We'd probably be able to do something pretty cool and watch that be the.
That's good. Yeah, that's going to be the next single. For the Fallen Dreams featuring Grandpa.
Yeah, that's the one that blows us up.
Well, man, let's wrap this up with, I mean, the new album, I've been listening to the last few days just back to back, and it's just, every time I put it on, man, I'm just like, I'm blown away of how good it is. And, you know, like, I'm like, What If should be a fucking smash, you know, and like, and just hearing you sing and hearing you, you know, your flow and everything else on the record, man.
Yeah.
It's great. I love it.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. A lot of work went into it. A lot of being vulnerable and being like, I don't know how to do this, but I'm gonna figure it out.
Right.
With all the years of doing vocals,
yeah,
the one thing that I was able to take that gave me an edge was just vocal control. And a lot of it's muscle memory and just the reps, man. Mm-hmm. Even now, like, we started playing that new stuff, like, you know, like No Heaven and What If and Last One Out, all the, like, the songs that have, like, the big catchy choruses. Yeah. We started playing those for the first time on that Gideon run last year.
Okay.
That was the first time we ever did it. And we can write it all day, play it. You know, so we took it and we, that tour was, I was, you know, learning as I went, yeah, trying to be at the best I could, you know, with only ever just screaming.
Yeah.
So the bouncing back and forth was a lot. First couple tours, but now I feel good.
Nice.
Feel good. It's just muscle memory and confidence. And I say that because I've had people come up to me, just mutual friends in the business and stuff, and like, what made you just decide to start singing? What
after all this time?
And you can sing too. Yeah. So it was, and I was like, you just gotta, silly, but you just gotta do it.
Yeah.
And then once you build that confidence and you start doing the reps of going back and forth with singing and screaming, and you're kind of just putting pen to paper every night over and over each tour, you know, where we're at, even on this headliner, I feel good. You know what I mean? It's still new.
Yeah.
You're never gonna master anything that quick. And I don't expect to. It wouldn't make it fun if it was that easy. I want it to be hard. Screaming.
Right.
In my sleep, man.
Yeah, that's gonna be the one where you might hit up a YouTube video every once in a while and, like, kind of check out what you're doing. You're like,
right, absolutely. Like, oh, good Lord. Okay, so I need to work on that one.
Right,
yeah. But yeah, for all things said, it's been a great experience. That record gave me a breath of fresh air in this, man. Like, that's why I think things feel differently for the Fallen Dreams now, is because I feel like I have this whole new goal to achieve.
Yeah.
Now I've done this side. Now I can be genuinely me, and I can just, let's make it happen. Let's do it. Let's keep rocking. Feel good.
Well, Chad, man, thanks for taking some time.
Always.
Here, this was fun.
Always, brother. My guy. Appreciate you, man.